B-Pod Studios.
Ready, set, go!
This is Checkpoint XP Daily, your daily dose of esports and video game discussion. A complete look at all things esports and gaming. A production of Beasley Esports XP. Here are your hosts, Nate Bender, Robbie Landis, Norris Howard, and Joe Sloan.
Checkpoint reached.
Hey, welcome into Checkpoint XP Daily for Wednesday, September 4th, 2019. Your home for esports and gaming. Coming up today on Checkpoint XP Daily, are MMOs just dead? Does WoW Classic mean that MMOs are just done as a genre? Plus, the UK Parliament is officially on Twitch. Those conversations are ahead here today on Checkpoint XP Daily. But we start today with Counter-Strike Global Offensive. ESL and DreamHack have announced a major collaborative event called the Counter-Strike Global Offensive Open Circuit.
Yes, and they're also colloquially known as the ESL Pro Tour.
And this is a major undertaking here because the CSGO scene is kind of notoriously fractured among a bunch of different tournaments and has been really one of the most frustrating parts about trying to understand the CSGO professional scene.
Because if you're on the outside looking in, you hear Refresh, you hear DreamHack, you hear StarLadder, you hear ESL, you hear IEM.
You hear too many names and acronyms.
That's right. Exactly. You hear so many different places that Counter-Strike is happening and you don't know necessarily what it means.
So joining us for this conversation, we have resident Counter-Strike enthusiast, expert, Weird Beard Rick Hoggerhide is joining us here in the studio. What's going on?
Hey, I should put that title on a business card.
Absolutely.
Quite catchy.
This is true.
So help us understand, what was it that led to the really kind of fractured nature of the CSGO scene?
It's really from just being one of the oldest esports, essentially, before the commoditization of Overwatch, before Rocket League, before anything really exploded. Counter-Strike Source 1.6, all the old Counter-Strike used to essentially be LAN games. They all, you know, were played in with a bunch of just nerds getting in a room and playing on, you know, a bunch of different desktops. And so what happened is different communities would start building up around each of the different groups. You'd have some in North America, you'd have some that were overseas, some in Europe, and they all seemed to just, you know, never jive because it wasn't a business proposal.
Yeah, and Valve never really made an attempt to sort of lock it down and prevent these other tournaments from running. And we've seen some of that kind of positioning with both Riot and Blizzard, where they've really wanted to control the tournaments around their games. Valve just kind of was like, okay, we've got Star Ladder, that's our, you know, our tournament series,
that one.
Right? And then the rest, you know, they didn't try to stem the tide of ESL
or
DreamHack.
I have a voice clip from Valve when it comes to why they didn't deal with the whole CSGO thing.
Really?
We really don't know what we're dealing with here, man.
I agree. I think it was just so much in so many places, as Rick said. And also, I think when you have Dota doing what Dota was doing, your resources are going there because it's making you $18 billion every year.
Dota is clearly the favored child of Valve. So when it comes to the professional scene, but this is a big deal because ESL and DreamHack are two of, let's say, arguably the larger leagues that operate for CSGO. Both of them trying to combine their efforts into a single circuit, that's pretty important for like the narrative of CSGO.
And not only is it important for the narrative of CSGO, the bigger thing that they're really trying to do is create forward momentum. When you have lots of these large events that seem to pop off, you can't tell me which one is the one, right? Yeah. Like, you can never say, okay, well, maybe I can't make this one, but I know that the next one's going to be much bigger.
Right.
Now what they're trying to do is they're trying to use all these smaller qualifiers building to the two, like, large championships every single year.
Right, in the same way where you have, like, you know, in college basketball, you got, like, the Big Ten tournament or the SEC tournament. Then, if you were a scrub, you get to go to the NIT.
Right.
But then you get to go to the big dance.
That's what I'm struggling to, like, put together. So it sounds to me like, you know, whereas we've got things with, like, League of Legends where that's kind of analogous to the NFL. There's a season, there's playoffs at the end. Overwatch the same way. This sounds a lot more like
golf or yes. tennis, where there's mm-hmm. a smattering of tournaments. You can earn some points, and maybe you qualify for some bigger tournaments at the end of the year with those points. The fighting game community is kind of the same way.
Functions exactly the same way. Big majors and then a super major at EVO.
Yeah. Exactly. So the idea of the ESL Pro Tour is we're going to take basically all the major ESL and DreamHack events. We're going to smash them together into one collaborative event, and those 20 tournaments will basically form a season at that point.
So, Rick, what does this do for places like Refresh Entertainment that have really tried to make a go of getting their foot in the door or dipping their toe in the water of tournament organizing? Or what does this do to the Star Ladder series, which seem to be left on the outs of the CSGO Open Circuit?
Really, what this is going to be doing is opening a few more doors to not only some different organizations, but also the people that were the teams that were just never invited. As it's been so far, it's essentially been very clicky. It's been, you either get the invite, you don't get the invite, and that's it. There's no way to get into the cool kids club. What they're trying to do, as I said, where they're trying to push forward to all these different larger events, what they're wanting to do is just have more bodies and more butts in seats, which means that they're going to be, say, hey, you're organizing a team. Hey, you want to organize an event? Come on in. They're just trying to make it so that it's more accessible to more people, because as of right now, CSGO is one of the largest and oldest gaming communities, but when it comes to like an actual esports organization, dead last out of, just really when it stacks up to most other places.
Well, and I think part of that is the narrative challenge, right? Like, when you're so fractured and spread among so many different events, we had a great narrative in Astralis last year, and for them to kind of be taken out by having to compete in Refresh Entertainment events this year, it really damages the ongoing narrative that ends up forming around some of these teams.
It is. It's for someone like me who's a CSGO layman, I don't know how to make heads or tails of who is actually good over a period of time outside of Team Liquid right now, who have just beaten everybody. So outside of that, I don't know how to look at, a separate team and say, oh, wow, they're third place in the standings. And then you read some stuff and you say, oh, man, I really like, I want to check them out. They seem like they'd be a fun team to watch. It's very hard for Rick, as you said, for new people to penetrate into CSGO. And I think this is really intelligent for them to move forward to get more people involved in the esport.
So, I guess my question is, is the game better served as trying to create that singular narrative, it's going to run throughout the entire season or throughout, a year, or does it lose some of the prestige that some of these tournaments have by doing this? Because if you're not one of those two big tournaments at the end of the year, you're kind of being relegated to the kids' table, aren't you? I mean, that's how the feeling to me is. Like, there's two events now that are must-see. Are the other ones still worth watching?
I still think the other ones are worth watching, just only because this isn't going to be a next year all of a sudden everything's totally different, right? Like, the narratives take years and years and years to sort of build, and especially with a lot of the teams, the issue with having the fractured different finals and whatnot has really been one of those things to where just because you win a giant Star Ladder or you win a giant, event, that doesn't make you the team. Liquid is right now, yes, they may be on top, but for a long, long time, it was Ninjas in Pajamas or it was Astralis or it was these different teams and whatnot. And just because they didn't go to a tournament and somebody else won it didn't mean that all of a sudden,
Astralis is not the team.
Yeah, so really, I think this is going to be, while it may relegate some people to the kids' table, I think they were all ready at the kids' table.
But I reject that notion, though, Joe, because that's like saying, do you think that, Combo Breaker is the kids' table of the FGC? It's not. People still love to watch a lot of the other events. People still love CEO. People still love Combo Breaker. People still love, Frostbite.
Yeah, someone has to show up and get the $100 prize, man.
Damn it, Robbie. That stings only because it's very partially true.
Yeah, it is.
But the thing is that, and one of the things that was so difficult to find a foothold in to watching CSGO is you didn't have these kind of like tentpole events, right? Like, for Overwatch, you've got the grand finals. If you can pay attention to no other part of the series, watch the grand finals and still be able to walk away from it.
Worlds
for League of Legends, right?
You got the summer split and the spring split finals.
Exactly.
The moments you have to tune in.
Exactly. There was no you must tune in moments. Like, there are great tournaments that I know of that
I like watching and that I enjoy. But I think that this makes some serious tentpole tournaments that make for must-watch tournaments.
So let me ask you, Rick, then, does this help CSGO? And I'm not saying it's not popular here, but if we think of where CSGO is popular, Europe is like the hotbed.
It's the hotbed
of Counter-Strike. Does this help it catch on more in North America, where viewers are more used to watching a narrative-driven league or a season-style way of presenting the games?
No, I don't believe that it's actually going to lead towards penetrating North America. And really, the big reason why is that the reason it hasn't caught as much in North America, from my understanding, is not the lack of narrative, but really kind of the complexity of the actual, like, the game itself, right? Like,
are you telling me we're too dumb to understand CSGO and that's why we don't like it?
No, I'm just saying it's a lot easier with something like Overwatch, where it's like, hey, get the objective, go. Whereas,
yeah, you know, I get it.
Like,
Overwatch has bright, shiny colors, and we're happy to look at it. I see what you're trying to say.
I think that's just the way that the game kind of is, like having to manage an economy and be like, ah, this is how much a buy is. I have $1,200. Like, people aren't trying to do that. They just want shooting.
I don't know,
guns.
But there are those aspects of League of Legends. Legends, though, that and still, that's the most popular esport.
This,
you know,
sounds like the Dota conversation. When I say I don't like Dota, they're like, "Oh, I'm sorry,
you're too stupid
it's the
to
thinking
like
man's League of Legends."
Yeah,
I have to hear that garbage.
I don't know what we're yelling about.
Anyway, Rick, thank you so much for joining us for this conversation. We really appreciate having you on.
Absolutely, guys.
We want to hear from you. Connect with us on social media. That's Checkpoint XP on Facebook and Twitter, and Checkpoint_XP on Instagram. Still ahead on Checkpoint XP Daily. Did you know that the UK Parliament is on Twitch and it is awesome? We're going to talk about that. But ahead next, are MMOs just dead? Are MMOs, like, I feel like with World of Warcraft Classic, the genre is officially eating its own tail. We have nothing more to look forward to. It's dead. The WoW killer ended up being WoW. Stick around. That's ahead next on Checkpoint XP Daily.
This is Checkpoint XP, esports and gaming radio.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top 5 Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
This is Checkpoint XP, esports and gaming radio. CheckpointXP.com.
Are MMORPGs officially dead?
Yep.
A genre that used to boast millions upon millions of players seems to be in the dust. Welcome back to Checkpoint XP. I want to thank everyone listening on Fox Sports WBSM 1340 AM in Florence, Alabama, and News Talk WGAC 580 and 95.1 in Augusta, Georgia. Make sure you're following us on our officially partner Twitch channel over at twitch.tv/checkpointxp. We've got a ton of emotes, including our beautiful faces, as well as not one, but two cat emotes. Tali and Fritz are actual cats, are Twitch emotes, and there's only one place to get them. It's over at twitch.tv/checkpointxp. This is a sad topic for me because MMORPGs are probably my favorite genre of video game ever. I remember the first time I played one and realized that I was playing with a massive world of other people.
What,
and it was
what
just
game was that, by the way?
Ultima Online. That dates me a little
wow.
bit. I understand that. But it was really revolutionary to me. And what's really sad, and what I've started to notice, is that, listen, I think that MMORPGs are just a genre that have lived its time and are done. With WoW Classic, with World of Warcraft Classic, this is just evidence to me that the genre is eating its own tail. There's nothing that you can do to be successful enough to justify how much money it takes to develop an online persistent world. There isn't.
So explain to us, because I feel like maybe in your old age you're a little confused here, right? WoW Classic just had one of the biggest launches since WoW Classic.
Since WoW.
So,
since the original WoW.
Right. Let's, so yeah, yeah, yeah. So all these people playing, 300,000 people watching some dude hit level 60.
Sure.
How does that spell out to you that MMOs are dead and nobody wants to play them anymore?
Well, because MMOs previous to this, there was a very specific formula to succeed. It needed to be attached to an already pre-existing intellectual property. That's why you see Final Fantasy Online, Lord of the Rings, Elder Scrolls Online. These are all pre-existing worlds that people are already invested in. There's kind of like one or two exceptions to this, which is EVE Online, which is kind of a unique setting out in space. There hasn't been another.
Terra still around?
I mean, yes, it's probably still around, but yeah. Is it marketable, successful,
no,
profitable?
Not to
that's
levels,
debatable. Yeah. And then the only other one that I can think of is Guild Wars. Guild Wars was pretty original and got people invested.
But even that is Guild Wars 2.
Exactly. So there are a lot of challenges. The overall, and you guys know this, the overall size of the dev team, the amount of assets, the amount of world space, and the amount of servers that it takes to run all those things are so cost intensive for a video game studio to manage and run on an ongoing basis. I think that we're seeing a turn towards, you know, partial MMOs, MMO lights.
So your Destiny.
Destiny 2, your Fallout 76s, your looter shooters that exist out there, right? That bring people together to play in an online environment, but it's not persistent, right?
No, they do the same. They essentially do the same things that MMOs did and get them more money because now they can also throw microtransactions in there.
Exactly. And there's less of an overhead development cost that's associated with it, too. For an MMO, an audience expects a massive world that they can't traverse easily or that takes a long time to traverse. And we know that that is just so cost intensive and development intensive. I just don't think that there's any way for the genre to continue. Now, World of Warcraft is a kind of unique example here. And as you had pointed out, had a great launch. You're absolutely right. But I need you guys to think back to when World of Warcraft actually first launched and had 11 million people playing it.
Yeah.
Right? 300,000 people interested in watching a guy hit level cap and then immediately disinterested in going on to the next thing does not say that it's the same cultural phenomenon that captured 10 million people on its first go round.
I think it is an interesting way to look at it, but at the same time, I think they're dead, but I think with the innovation of looter shooters and other genres, that I think that is the natural progression of the genre. I don't want to say that MMOs all of a sudden are dead, but they're dead in their previous sort of incarnation. That, what you just described with big, huge worlds and all that stuff, I don't think we'll see that until cloud-based development becomes really a thing, and I think you'll see a resurgence of them. I honestly think that.
Do a cost-benefit analysis here of how much money it takes to develop something like an MMO and how much money it brings in and how much it costs to develop something like Fortnite and how much money that brings in.
But when you're developing on the cloud, a lot of those costs are driven down drastically because you're not maintaining machines. Well, that's another big thing. So I think...
But you will to connect players in an online environment, you will need servers, you will need machines.
Well, you won't need dev hubs. You won't be, those dev hubs don't need to be super duper state of the art because you're developing on the cloud. You're not restricted necessarily by that aspect of it.
Still
which
gotta
is,
pay all those
which
people.
Is st- you do, but it is still a cost that you will be cutting by developing on the
Norris,
cloud.
I do think there will be an era where the MMO, the classic MMO as we know it, will make a resurgence, but it's not going
to
be it's not going
to
be until AI is doing most of the development work. When AI can help create these worlds, then you will see a resurgence of games like that, but we are very many years away from that still. I just went on to Twitch real quick because I was curious. There are 233,000 people watching World of Warcraft Classic, which is impressive. It is the leading thing on Twitch. But I did start scrolling down to find, all right, what's the next best performing MMO on Twitch?
I'm sure you had to scroll quite a bit.
I mean, do you count Black Desert Online?
Sure.
Yeah.
Okay. Unfortunately.
That is the next best performing MMO.
Which it has been.
How many? Hang on. How many people?
4,000.
Ooh. Yeah, not great.
That is a precipitous fall off.
It is.
And what other studio, what company would have the cojones to look at that and go, yeah, I think I can cut into WoW a little bit. Blizzard. I don't know. No.
Well, not Blizzard. Blizzard already did it.
Blizzard already did it.
With their own thing. But, I think there are a couple companies that would be out there to do it, but I agree that it would be with a already existing IP.
I don't know,
I think Disney could get involved and do something, especially now that they've bought everything.
I don't know about that.
I don't know.
They would.
I've already watched the Titanic sink once. I don't need to watch that happen again.
Here's the thing. How many MMOs can you name that are in development right now that are not Ashes of Creation?
Oh, not many.
None.
Zero.
None.
Not many.
I can't name
zero
any.
That aren't Ashes of Creation.
And to me, that speaks louder than any of our opinions or any of the tea leaves that we can read, right? The fact that we can't name any major MMOs currently in development by any major studio right now, to me, says that there is no long-term plan.
Wait, I've
for
got
the
one.
Genre.
Star
really?
Citizen.
Oh, stop it.
You're would you call it No Man's Sky
stop
MMO?
It.
No,
you, listen, you know that that's a scam. And you,
it's
you
a scam.
Come on.
It really is, and it's the most brilliant scam of our like generation. Like this, Star Citizen will be the Bernie Madoff of our generation.
it very well might be.
We're going to have a movie about The Big Short with Star Citizen.
You know what? I want to see that film. We want to hear from you. Do you think the MMO genre is just done? Connect with us on social media. That's Checkpoint XP on Facebook and Twitter, and Checkpoint_XP on Instagram. Coming up next on Checkpoint XP Daily, did you know that the UK Parliament is on Twitch now? Like, this is awesome. Have you watched it?
Yeah.
Awesome.
It's pretty great.
Stick around. That conversation is ahead next on Checkpoint XP Daily.
Checkpoint XP, esports and gaming radio.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top 5 Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
This is Checkpoint XP, esports and gaming radio. CheckpointXP.com.
The UK Parliament.
What?
Has its own Twitch channel.
Oh, wow.
Welcome back to Checkpoint XP, your home for esports and gaming. I want to thank everyone listening on the Hawk 1340 in Wenatchee, Washington, as well as the Fan 97.1 in Columbus, Ohio. Checkpoint XP Daily is now a part of the BPod Network at BPodStudios.com. For more great listening options like Inside the Ropes, a weekly look inside wrestling in the WWE, and Talk and Rock with Meltdown, an interview and music news podcast, go to BPodStudios.com, the place to be for podcast discovery. If I asked you what the UK Parliament and Bernie Sanders have in common, would you believe it's Twitch? Because it is.
What?
Both of them have had a presence on Twitch, and actually the UK Parliament is really embracing it because their channel has emotes and everything.
Wow.
All right.
That's
clearly
really weird.
I'm having some problem with the headset here or something like that. Who is on Twitch?
The UK Parliament.
The House of Lords and House of Commons.
That's
like,
right.
Like England.
Yeah.
Yes.
So it's sort of like, I mean,
I have internet over there, Joe.
Some of our older listeners are going to get really mad at me. I need to speak to the younger listeners in the crowd. There used to be this channel called C-SPAN where they would just set up a camera and let government play out on screen. That's sort of what this is like.
It is the most boring channel ever.
Well, C-SPAN is.
Yeah, that's what I mean, yeah.
UK Parliament is actually maybe some of the most entertaining government proceedings in the world and absolutely deserves to be on Twitch. Have you seen footage?
No.
Okay, Robbie, I need you to pull up the clip.
Yeah, I got it.
All right, let's roll this.
Let's roll it.
Through first in order to prevent in order
table.
Is there a fight going on or something?
No, like, this is normal.
Oh.
I say to the Chancellor of the Duchy that when he turns up at our children's school as a parent, he's a very well-behaved fellow. He wouldn't dare behave like that in front of Colin Hall, and neither would I. Don't gesticulate. Don't rant. Spare us the theatrics. Behave yourself. Be a good boy.
If you don't think this is the most entertaining thing,
Did he tell him to be a,
good boy?
After telling him to spare the theatrics?
Right. Wait a minute. Like, what is it about, like, the English and the way they argue with each other where they have to be like, spare the theatrics? He's a well-behaved fellow.
Down with this sort of thing.
You're listening to Checkpoint XP, Esports, and Gaming Radio. Listen, I think first of all, the fact that any of these proceedings at any given time sound like a Monty Python sketch gone awry,
right? Yeah,
should be a hook in and of itself. But like, honestly, this is so entertaining to watch, and this is just kind of like your average day in Parliament.
Well, I don't want to say it's average. They're dealing with a Brexit deal right now, whether to just go through Brexit.
No.
Without a deal, or do they wait?
But it's regularly this contentious.
No, it is
regular. Like, this is how, honestly, I think this is how government should operate. This, and what's great about it is that a lot of these colleagues, when they're done, you know, arguing this way, they go to the pub and they, you know, like, they're colleagues, they're co-workers.
No, and
Nate, you're telling me that it's regularly this contentious, not over Brexit, but instead of over, like, fishing taxes?
Sure. Absolutely. Absolutely.
You'd be surprised.
I mean, okay, I've seen some good TV shows. I've seen some good British TV shows. How come there isn't a show that's just 30 minutes of that?
Well, I think there are some laws in the UK that prevent certain, like, parodies and things like that.
No, it makes perfect sense. House of Cards started in as an English show, right?
Yeah.
Oh my God, House of Cards makes way more sense context of that insanity.
Because you're like, this is too ridiculous. Right. There's no way any president or congressperson would ever be allowed to do anything.
In our House of Cards, there's a scene where, like, Frank has, like, all of, like, the senators, like, brought in by, like, the bailiffs to, like, escort, like, bring them in over their shoulder. Like, that would never happen. Now it makes sense.
It is. But like, you really have to sit back and appreciate the amount of, you know, non-traditional content that is making its way toward Twitch. And listen, 4,000 people were sitting around watching the UK Parliament when I had just popped into the channel randomly this afternoon, right? You have to appreciate how much non-gaming, non-traditional content that we would think of on Twitch is actually finding a very good home here.
Well, but beyond that, I think it's important for not just something like Parliament, but for all of governments around the world to really think about this as a platform, because how many people do we know that have been tuned out from politics for years now? And I think it's important for, you know, politics, instead of trying to be highfalutin and be this, you know, super lofty thing, go and meet the people where they are.
Absolutely.
Make the content, make the stuff available so people can understand politics. That's the problem.
Yeah.
People don't know how any of it works, and that's why I think people get turned off. Well, when you see how the sausage is made, you start to have more of an appreciation for it.
I definitely agree with that, but there's a really big aspect here, and I think that this is what I think the UK Parliament gets right that we kind of get wrong, is that they allow all the contentious stuff to happen during their debates, and then kind of operate as colleagues after that. We had already established that. But it's almost the reverse here in America, where the most divisive and the most challenging content doesn't happen on the floor of the House of Representatives or the floor of the Senate, right? Actually watching those proceedings is fairly boring. And then after they, get through all the boring stuff, they jump on Fox News or they jump on MSNBC and they start riling each other inside of their bubbles. This is at least two political oppositions talking to one another. I would much rather
see
that.
Even if it's chaos.
Even if it is chaos.
I think this is what we're starting to see is more of these political factions, whether it be Bernie Sanders or whether it be even like the Washington Post starting to embrace Twitch and
sure.
embrace the media that younger people are actually watching.
It behooves them to. One of the main reasons why President Obama's run in 08 was so important is because his campaign was really one of the first ever in the history of America to embrace the internet as a communication vessel.
And leverage social media.
It was the first time that had ever been done. Now, you can't run a campaign without social media. As a matter of fact, if your social media sucks, you probably don't win. You guaranteed don't win. So it's a paradigm that exists now. It has existed and will continue to exist. And until certain candidates and certain parties start getting on Twitch, getting on Discord, getting on a bunch of other places where people are congregating, their message isn't going to resonate
with people. In 20 years, do you think then the televised debate just is kind of gone? It is replaced by being on Twitch or somewhere else?
I mean, I think quote unquote TV will always exist.
Yeah.
So I think you'll have that paradigm, but it'll be simulcast on streaming sites or streaming platforms for sure.
I can't wait for the day that I tune in to CNN to watch the debates, and on CNN proper, they've got like the Twitch chat scroll on the side. That would be mighty, mighty interesting, although also pretty problematic.
I can't imagine. Imagine the FCC having to navigate that mess.
It would be so complicated. But I mean, like, we're one step removed from that already by showing tweets and Facebook comments on screen. I'm sure that, you know, there's some AI algorithm that could figure it out.
Emotes only chat.
Yeah, exactly. Well, we want to hear from you. What do you think about the UK Parliament, or Bernie Sanders for that matter, being on Twitch? Connect with us on social media. That's Checkpoint XP on Facebook and Twitter, and Checkpoint _XP on Instagram. Thanks for joining us for Checkpoint XP Daily, the first internationally syndicated show on esports and gaming for radio. Visit our website, checkpointxp.com, for insight on esports and gaming, as well as a wide collection of podcasts and interviews. Join us Monday through Friday at 4 p.m. Eastern at twitch.tv/checkpointxp. Our theme is provided by the band Weird At Last. Find more at weirdatlast.com. Checkpoint XP Daily is a production of Beasley Esports XP. Lead segment producing by Joe Sloan. Brand management by Chad Callahan. And of course, my co-host, Bull Double Duty, as producers for Checkpoint XP Daily. Robbie Landis, Norris Howard, and Joe Sloan. My name's Nate Bender. Keep listening.
You've been listening to Checkpoint XP, a complete look at all things esports and gaming. Check out the latest esports and gaming news and opinions at checkpointxp.com.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.